Welcome back to the deep dive. There's this relentless logic in the corporate world, specifically when you look at a balance sheet. Labor is a line item, it's an expense. And what do you do with expenses?
You minimize them, you squeeze them.
Exactly. The logic says that every dollar you pay a worker is a dollar that isn't profit.
That is the traditional view, the input-output model. You put in the absolute minimum amount of coal to keep the engine running.
Right. But then you have this other school of thought people who argue that humans aren't coal.
That's a good way to put it.
They argue that if you pay people more, something fundamental changes. They work harder, they stay longer, they care more.
But for decades, that's been a really hard thing to prove. It's often stuck in ideology.
Yes, it's opinion pieces and political shouting matches.
Or it's based on macro data that's just too fuzzy to really tell us anything. We see, unemployment numbers shift, but we rarely get the peek inside the black box of a specific company.
Until now. Today, we are looking at a paper that basically kicks the door down on that black box.
I love this paper for that reason.
We're diving into a massive real-world experiment within a Fortune 500 retailer where they voluntarily jacked up wages to see what would happen.
And the results really do challenge some core assumptions.
So let's get the formalities right
Yes.
so we can dive in. The paper we are covering today is titled "The Payoffs of Higher Pay: Labor Supply and Productivity Responses to a Voluntary Firm Minimum Wage."
And it is written by Natalia Emanuel and Emma Harrington.
And as is our custom here on the deep dive, I want to read the abstract verbatim. It gives us our roadmap. It
Okay.
says, "What are the returns to firms of paying more? We study a Fortune 500 firm's voluntary firm-wide 15-hour minimum wage, which affected some warehouses more than others. Using a continuous difference in differences design, we find that a one-hour pay increase, 5.5%, halves worker departures, reduces absenteeism by 18.6%, and increases productivity, boxes moved per hour, by 5.7%. These productivity gains fully defrayed increased labor costs,
That's the key phrase.
offsetting the firm's incentive to mark down wages. We develop a simple model that connects efficiency wage incentives and monopsony power, showing how these forces can counterbalance each other to keep wages closer to workers' marginal revenues."
Yeah, that phrase, fully defrayed, is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. It essentially suggests the raise paid for itself.
Which is the holy grail, right? But before we get to the bottom line, we have to understand the setting. We aren't talking about a tech campus with free lattes.
No, far from it. We are talking about the backbone of the economy, logistics.
Massive warehouses.
Massive. The paper describes facilities that are millions of square feet.
I think they compared it to hundreds of football fields. I can't even wrap my head around a building that size.
It's immense. And the work is grueling. You have people operating machinery 40 feet in the air to retrieve pallets or.
Or just standing at a dock manually loading boxes into a truck for 8, 10 hours a day.
It's physical, it's precise, and frankly, it's exhausting work.
And crucially for the economics of this, it's happening in what they call a thick labor market.
Right. Which sounds a bit odd, but it just means there's a lot of competition for workers.
This isn't a company town where they're the only employer.
Exactly. The paper notes that in the regions where these warehouses operate, this firm is competing with nearly 100 other logistics companies.
100. So if you're a worker, you have
That
options.
too. If you don't like your boss, or the pay is 50 cents better down the road, you can walk. That's really important context.
Okay, let's talk about the data access here, because this is what separates this paper from, a standard government
This
report.
is the gold mine. They got access to administrative data from 2018 to 2021.
So every hire, every termination.
Every dollar paid. But the real treasure was the warehouse management system, or WMS.
The tracking software.
Yeah, you could call it the big brother of the warehouse. It tracks every single scan.
Every single one.
If you pick up a box, scan it, and put it on a truck, the system knows. It calculates boxes moved per hour for every single individual.
Wow. So when we talk about productivity later, we are literally counting the boxes.
Down to the second, across over 14,000 workers and more than 50 warehouses.
Okay, so the setup is the event. The firm decides voluntarily to implement a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Right, and this wasn't a law. It was a corporate strategy change from the C-suite.
And that's important, isn't it? The fact that it was top down.
It's key for the scientific validity. If local managers had just decided, hey, let's pay Bob more, that would ruin the data. That's bias.
But because corporate just said everyone makes at least $15 now, it created a natural experiment.
It did because, and this is the clever part, not everyone actually got a raise.
Right.
Exactly. Imagine you have warehouse A in, say, a city with a lower cost of living. They were paying $13 an hour.
Okay.
Suddenly the policy hits and everyone bumps up to $15. That's a huge raise. That's your treated group.
But then you have warehouse B in a more expensive metro area.
Right. Where they were already paying $16 an hour just to get people in the door.
So for them, the new policy doesn't change anything.
Nothing. They are already above the minimum. So they become the control group.
And this is the continuous difference in differences, design the abstract mention.
Yep. You compare the change in the low-wage warehouse to the lack of change in the high-wage warehouse.
And that lets you filter out all the other noise, like the economy or the season.
It isolates just the impact of that extra dollar.
So let's get into the findings, and we have to start with turnover, because the baseline numbers in this industry are, I mean, they sound like a typo.
They are staggering. The industry norm cited is 132% annual turnover.
132%. So if I have 100 people, over the course of a year, I am hiring 132 new people.
You're replacing your entire staff, and then a third of them again?
It's a revolving door.
Just think about the operational chaos. You're constantly onboarding, teaching safety protocols.
And then they leave. So the firm raises wages by roughly $1 an hour for that treated group. That's a 5.5% raise. What happens to that revolving door?
It slows down dramatically. Worker departures were cut in half.
Halved. Just for a dollar an hour.
Halved. The quit rate just plummeted. The paper calculates a labor supply elasticity of about 9.
Okay, break that down. Elasticity is one of those Econ 101 terms.
In plain English, it just measures sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
An elasticity of 9 means that for every 1% you increase wages, your retention improves by 9%.
Which is huge.
It's incredibly high. It tells you that these workers are hypersensitive to their paycheck.
Right.
If you pay just a little less, they leave. But if you give them that small bump, that 5.5% bump, you suddenly lock them in.
And this wasn't the company deciding to fire fewer people.
Right.
The firing rate stayed flat.
Exactly. This was entirely driven by a drop in voluntary quits.
Yeah.
The workers chose to stay.
Okay, so retention is a huge win. But here's the part where the skeptics usually chime in.
Mm-hmm.
The old school logic says, if I pay you more, you get comfortable. You get lazy.
The fear of the slacker effect.
Right, but the data here just, it destroys that argument.
Completely. Let's look at boxes moved per hour. That same $1 raise, the 5.5% bump, led to a 5.7% increase in productivity.
Wait, it's almost a perfect one-to-one ratio?
It's a remarkably linear relationship. You pay 1% more, you get 1% more output.
The workers effectively paid for their own race.
They did.
But we need to dig into how, because I don't buy that people just started running faster. We aren't robots.
You're right, and the researchers dug into that. It wasn't about running faster. It was about uptime.
Uptime.
Turns out 58% of that productivity gain came from workers simply spending more time effectively moving boxes and less time dealing with problems.
Ah, so this is the experience dividend.
Exactly. If you have 132% turnover, your warehouse is full of rookies.
Rookies make mistakes.
They drop things. They get lost. They have to stop and ask a supervisor, hey, where does this go? All that downtime kills productivity.
But because the raise cut turnover in half, the workforce got more experience. They knew the layout.
They got into a flow state. They weren't sprinting. They were just stumbling less.
And we know they weren't rushing dangerously.
We do. The data shows injury rates didn't go up.
So it's not work harder, it's work smoother.
Which is arguably much more valuable to a company.
Okay, there is another dimension to this reliability. Absenteeism. The no call, no show.
The bane of every shift manager's existence.
I can only imagine. The study found that the $1 raise reduced unexcused absences by 18.6%.
Which is massive.
But this brings up a really deep question the authors wrestle with. Is this selection or is it incentive?
Ah, the classic nature versus nurture of economics.
Right. Did the higher wage just attract a better class of worker? Or did the same workers suddenly decide to show up more often?
It's a crucial distinction. If it's just selection, then you aren't really changing behavior. You're just poaching good employees from your competitors.
Which is a zero-sum game for the economy as a whole.
Right. But the analysis here shows it's almost an even split. About half the improvement came from selection.
So hiring new people who are just more steady.
Yes. But the other half, that was incentive. They looked at workers who were there before the raise and stayed after.
The same individuals.
And those specific individuals became more reliable. They showed up more. They moved more boxes.
That is really powerful. It says that reliability isn't just a character trait. It's a rational economic response.
If the job pays peanuts and your car breaks down, maybe you just don't go in. But if the job pays a premium,
you fix the car, you find a ride, you protect that asset.
Exactly. And just to prove this wasn't a fluke, they cross-checked their findings with data from a massive staffing agency.
A completely different data set.
Yeah, 93,000 workers. And they found the same pattern. Workers placed in higher-paying jobs were way less likely to be fired for attendance issues.
Okay, I want to pause here and play devil's advocate. We are looking at data from 2018 to 2021.
I know where you're going with this.
We had a global pandemic in the middle of that. Couldn't a skeptic say, of course turnover dropped, people were scared to quit during COVID?
That is a totally valid criticism. And the authors anticipated this. They included a study within a study, the single warehouse case.
This is the pre-COVID anomaly.
Right. This happened in 2019. Totally normal economy. There was one warehouse where the manager was desperate to raise wages he put in the request, and classic corporate bureaucracy, it got stuck.
The tale as old as time.
And then suddenly, boom, the approval comes through. They get a $2 an hour raise all at once.
So it's a perfect shock to the system, completely isolated from the pandemic.
Exactly. And the results. Turnover dropped by 40%. Productivity rose by 16%. Absenteeism dropped by 20%.
Those numbers line up almost perfectly with the main study.
They do. It confirms that the mechanics of pay more, get more hold up even when the world isn't on fire.
So let's zoom out to the theory for a second. The paper frames this as a battle between two economic models, monopsony and efficiency wages.
These are usually taught as opposing forces.
Let's simplify them. Monopsony is basically the company power model, right?
Right. It says because finding a job is hard, companies have leverage. They can pay you less than what you actually contribute.
It encourages them to mark down wages. But then you have efficiency wage theory,
which is the motivation model.
Oh.
It says paying more than the market rate is smart because it lowers turnover and boosts effort.
So you have one force pulling wages down and one pushing them up.
And the brilliance of this paper is how it shows them balancing out. If the firm only listened to the monopsony logic,
they'd underpay and end up with that 132% turnover disaster.
Exactly. They save on payroll, but they bleed money on recruitment and lost productivity.
Yeah.
But because the efficiency wage effect is so strong,
that one-to-one jump in productivity,
that savings from low wages is actually a phantom.
So underpaying is expensive.
That's the bumper sticker summary, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The efficiency gains from the raise effectively pay for the raise.
Which brings us to the ultimate bottom line. This is a Fortune 500 company. Did they lose money on this deal?
This is the big reveal. The answer is no.
They broke even.
Better than that. The productivity gains, combined with the massive savings from not having to constantly hire and train new people,
it all added up.
It fully defrayed the cost of the wage hike.
So the raise was effectively free.
For the company, yes.
Yeah.
The return on investment was neutral to positive. They got a stable, experienced workforce for the same net cost.
And the market noticed, right?
They did. The firm's stock price actually outperformed its competitors by about 11 to 13% following the announcement.
Wow.
So investors realized that stabilizing the operation was worth it.
That is incredible. But there is a twist here that I can't stop thinking about.
What's that?
The firm didn't do this because they ran this sophisticated model and predicted the productivity boost.
No, not at all. The paper notes that the firm's internal finance models, the spreadsheets they used to approve this, completely ignored productivity.
They just left it out.
They treated labor strictly as a cost. They thought they were just spending money to fix a hiring problem. They assumed productivity would stay flat.
They stumbled into efficiency by accident.
They did. They did the right thing for the wrong reason, and it paid off.
And that leaves us with a pretty provocative thought to chew on.
It really does. If this sophisticated Fortune 500 company didn't realize that paying more would boost productivity,
Who else is missing it?
Right. How many companies are out there right now keeping wages suppressed to save money, but are actually torching their own bottom line through turnover and inefficiency?
How much productivity is being left on the table simply because we treat labor as a liability to be minimized
rather than an asset that responds to investment?
It suggests that the greedy strategy might not even be the most profitable one.
Sometimes the spreadsheet is missing the most important variable, the human element.
Well, on that note, we are going to wrap up this deep dive. It turns out sometimes you really do get what you pay for.
And sometimes you get a little bit more.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you on the next one.